Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
There's an old song by the Canadian band Spirit of the West called Political, and I've been thinking about it as I prepared to speak to our next guest. Hello, welcome to the Full Comment Podcast. My name is Brian Lilly, your host, and our next guest is going to, we're going to delve into the issue of politics in schools. And the reason that song Political by Spirit of the West was in my head is because it's a song about a breakup. A breakup because everything was so political that the couple just couldn't handle it anymore. And that's kind of what happened to Chanelle Fall, a woman who used to teach in the public school system and is currently not teaching. We'll get into that in a moment. Before I bring on Chanelle, though, I do want to remind you, you can subscribe. Please do subscribe to the Full Comment Podcast. Hit the subscribe button on whatever device you're listening on. You can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google, Amazon, Spotify, all the usual platforms. Hit subscribe, leave a comment, and if you like what you're hearing, then please share it around. So a couple of years back, Chanelle Fall was teaching, minding her own business at school, but getting a little bothered by some of the politics. And then she posted something on Facebook that led to a complaint being filed and then a suspension because her Facebook post was not politically correct. Chanelle Fall joins me now from Ottawa this morning. Good day.
Thank you so much for inviting me on. I think this is a really important topic to discuss today.
Let's give me the elevator pitch version of what happened to you. You know, because I want to get into how you got into teaching and where things changed for you. But did I describe it accurately? You made a post that somebody didn't like, and that started problems for you in the teaching profession?
Yeah, that's exactly it. It was in February 2021. I had recently kind of woken up to everything that was going on. Before that, I'd say in the summer of 2020 that I kind of started to see things differently. But I started speaking out against it very carefully. I knew what kind of environment I was, you know, getting into. And I made one post one day. It was a private Facebook group. And what I said was essentially that we shouldn't indoctrinate kids with critical race theory. We should teach them how to think and not what to think. And anyway, a teacher I had never spoken with before, she saw that. She thought it was harmful and offensive, so she reported me to my principal. The next day at school, I got a letter informing me that I was under investigation. And as you said, that ended up landing me with a suspension. It ended up landing me with another investigation. Anyway, it's been ongoing ever since. I'm still being investigated today.
You said that things changed for you. How would you describe yourself when you got into teaching? Like, what attracted you to teaching? Because people often go in for a specific reason, often an idealistic reason. What was it for you that drew you to teaching? And then we'll talk about what changed after.
Well, I knew I wanted to be a teacher since I was probably in grade 10. I don't know exactly what it was, but I know I grew up in a big family. I had a lot of younger cousins, so I was always naturally the one who would organize activities for us to do when we got together. I just loved doing that. And then I guess I got to high school. I really, really liked my biology classes, and I thought it would be just the best path for me to dive into that deeper and then to teach that to high school students. So I went for it. I would say probably the best word to describe myself at the time in university and in my first years of teaching would be sheltered because I wasn't ideologically driven per se, but I was not really aware of the political landscape that much. I kind of just went along with things. I didn't really do too much of my own thinking, if that makes sense.
It does. So then I guess if there were politics at play when you first started teaching, that you wouldn't necessarily have noticed or cared or been bothered. Would you say that's accurate?
Yeah, I think this ideology does a really good job at kind of hiding in the shadows. It is covered up with really pretty language of being inclusive and not being racist and all that, which obviously most people would agree with. So it's easy to let it kind of slide by, and you just think you're being a good person and you agree to it to a certain point. But if you really, really get to thinking about it, it starts to raise a couple red flags, and you start to realize that anybody who objects to the ideology in any way is, an outcast and has to be shamed, and that kind of thing I didn't agree with at all. So I would say one of the moments that shifted my thinking the most was the summer of 2020 when one of my old professors got canceled, and I respected that man a lot. He had supervised my thesis. He was a really, really good professor. And all he said was that all lives mattered. And people just came at him. He ended up losing his job. So I stood up for him at that time. And I remember being deleted by a handful of people on Facebook. And I thought, what is going on here? You know, so that was one of the moments that really shifted me.
What was it that got the professor canceled?
It was a tweet. So it was after the George Floyd murder. He put out a tweet. He's an evolutionary biologist. So he said something along the lines of, racism is stupid. We are all evolved from single-celled organisms. All lives matter. He hashtagged all lives matter. So he was supporting the movement. He was saying racism is stupid. We all have to treat each other like human beings and get along and not be racist, you know? And I guess he didn't understand the subtlety of what that all lives matter hashtag had come to mean. It was now a racist thing to say.
And yet, knowing that, you still made a post that led to you not being fully canceled, but in some ways canceled. Did you not get the memo? You're not supposed to do that. You're not supposed to go offside of what is allowed.
That's a good point. Yes, I did get the memo, and I did know that there was risk involved. And I guess the reason that I did it anyway is that I got more afraid of the alternative. At a certain point, I started to think about what happens when, you know, societies devolve into this authoritarian kind of totalitarianism where everybody's lying and everybody has to think the same thing, and we cannot have opposing views anymore. And that got to be even scarier than me just losing my job. It was me losing my whole society, you know.
What do you mean by losing your whole society? You felt pushed out not just of teaching?
Well, I felt like this was a bigger risk. It wasn't just about myself. It was about our institutions and the basic principles that we were destroying in the name of this ideology. I really felt that, you know, in 10 years or 20 years, our society look nothing like it does today if everybody just decides that they're going to shut off their brain and just go along with whatever the activists say, even when it leads to situations like canceling someone for saying that all lives matter. That's just not a good way to for society to go forward.
What was it that in critical race theory that was bothering you? What specifically? Because look, this has been hotly debated, and I've had people tell me critical race theory doesn't exist. Well, that's not true. It's a theory that's been around for decades. People have said it's not taught in schools. We know that's not true because teachers like yourself come forward and say, hey, wait a minute, I'm not comfortable with this. So beyond teaching kids that racism is wrong, which I don't know, well, Actually, I do hear from some crazy people via email now and again who are racists, but most people in civil society, regardless of politics, religion, background, they don't subscribe to racism as a way to live. So, you know, it is the overwhelmingly popular position that racism is bad. So what is it that CRT was, or you were being asked to teach in critical race theory that was bothering you?
Well, I think what it is the word racist is now means something different than it used to mean. So most people, when they say that they support these anti-racism initiatives, what they're saying is they want to treat everyone the same regardless of their skin color. And we're all human beings, we all have the same opportunities, which is fine. And most people would support that. But you get the activists who now have redefined racism, and they've now it means something like this ever-present societal like force that's always lingering in the background somewhere. Every single situation has racism in it. You just got to find it. And it's not necessarily individual behavior even. So you might not even know that you're participating in the racism, but it is just there. And now if you ask them to substantiate their claims and you say, you know, what's an example of racism, or how do you know that our society is racist? Why are you so sure of this? All they can ever point to is differential group outcomes. That's all they have. So if you look at the anti-racism professional advisory that the Ontario College of Teachers put out in September 2020, I believe, they have examples in there to justify kind of their position on this. And what they've put forward is, okay, here are examples. We have Black kids are being suspended at a higher rate than white kids, or Black kids aren't succeeding as well as white students, things like that. And, you know, any respectable academic will look at that statistic and say, okay, what is causing this? And they can look at multiple factors, right? They can do a multivariate analysis and determine, okay, what is contributing to this? What does the family, the average family of a Black student versus a white student look like? What's playing into this? Let's figure it out so that we can actually solve it. But the critical race theorists believe that it's all due to racism, it's all discrimination and bias, and the solution is to put in more anti-discrimination, anti-bias training, and then somehow these group outcome differences are going to all even out.
Well, what if it's socioeconomic factors? You know, I'm thinking of some neighborhoods in Toronto, mm-hmm. With large Black populations that are economically, they're at the bottom. And that leads to a lot of outcomes. You know, if you follow the social science on it, if you just completely discount the socioeconomic and say, well, no, it's just racism, then you're not going to address the socioeconomic factors that are actually at the core of it.
Exactly. And these socioeconomic factors would affect people of all races, right? So a lot of people are, you know, really disadvantaged white folks who have no money whatsoever. They're living paycheck to paycheck. They can hardly, you know, sustain themselves. And then they're being told at school, you know, when maybe they might not even have a lunch that day, they're being told that they have all the power and privilege in society. I mean, what does this do for a child's mental health? What does it do for their, their sense of identity in the world and their motivation? Like, it's.
Did you see it create division among students in class?
I would say so. I think, I haven't been in a classroom now for a year and a half, so it's hard to really know exactly how it is today. But I will say that from the time I started teaching to the time I stopped, which is 4 years, I found that students were more reluctant to share their opinions by the end of it than when I started. I think there's this self-censorship going on, which is just really impacting how students can learn to think, you know, in a classroom. Like it's, they just have to hold it back. Unless their opinion is consistent with the ideology, they are too scared to share it.
We saw that recently with the story in the Ottawa Valley, student in small town of Renfrew. No insult to Renfrew, but you know, compared to big cities, it's fairly small, small community. And a student there at a Catholic high school was suspended for saying there are only two genders. And then when he decided to come back to class because he wanted to go to school again, but he hadn't apologized and met all the other criteria, so suspension was still on. He was arrested. That student is being denied an education because he has a different point of view. He says that there are other students that are self-censoring, and that's what you found in the classroom on this, and I'm guessing other topics.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, I get secondhand accounts from a lot of people too. Like I'm just saying what I've seen from my own personal experience, but I hear from teachers and parents all the time. And I get parents telling me that, for example, their six-year-old white kid now is being told by other kids at the school that they can't play with them because they're white and things like that. So, and it happens both ways, I'm sure, but this, I mean, being super, super hyper aware of your race when you're six or seven is just, it's not natural, first of all, and it leads to obviously more tribalism. And I don't think we're thinking through the effects of this teaching at all.
What's been the response from your fellow teachers? You know, I'm sure many of them have views on you, some maybe positive, some maybe negative. The positive ones, I'm sure, can't say things in public. But what's been the feedback you've gotten, both positive and negative?
Yeah, that's right. The ones that support me have not done so in a public manner, really. But yeah, the teachers that I know in real life, I would say that I've been deleted and blocked by a lot of them. Which was hard at first when I didn't really have like a circle, like a group that was supporting me. Now I finally am at a place where I feel more comfortable with my views. But at first it was really difficult to see that. I do have a lot of teachers who have reached out and they support me. But as you said, they can't say so publicly. And a lot of them who are a mystery to me, to be honest. They're still on my Facebook page and they have not reached out to me at all, even though they know what's happening. So I'm curious myself to know what they're thinking.
Do you want to go back into teaching?
I would love to go back into teaching. I don't know if that's something that's going to happen for me just because you know how it is. You know, if they Google my name, they're going to find all kinds of stuff about my political views, and it doesn't align with their school values now. So I'm not going to put my hopes up too much, but I do really hope that one day I will get hired again and I'll be able to provide my students with, you know, balanced opposing views on issues and not just push one way of thinking.
All right, Chanel, we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, I want to ask you about your decision to run for trustee and what your advice would be for people who are concerned about the direction of the education system.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
So, Chanel, you moved out of the classroom. You stopped teaching a little while ago, but you decided last fall to run for school trustee in Ottawa. What prompted that? Was it the direction you saw the school system going in, the issues that we were talking about that made you uncomfortable on the teaching side and you felt you could make a difference as a trustee?
What prompted it was probably a lot of peer pressure. I had a lot of people telling me I should do it, and it was a very last minute decision. It was a few days before the election. I just thought, okay, I've never done this before. I have no idea what I'm doing, but I was in the school system. I think I have good ideas in terms of what school boards should be focusing on and what kind of identity politics we should get rid of. And I just thought, well, I'll put my name forward and see what happens. And it was a fun experience. I really hope that more people will, fun in terms of, I did get smeared in the media a lot, and it was up and down and all of that. But, you live and learn, and you, now that's something that I've done. I've checked off my list. Maybe I'll do it again one day. Maybe I won't. But I really hope that people will get more involved in the local school boards, because they're making a lot of really harmful decisions at this point.
Well, when you were in teaching, where did you see this push for politicization? Regardless of what type it is, not just critical race theory, but there's all kinds of politicization in the classroom that I see. I'm not sure that if my kids were little again that I would put them in the public school system in Ontario or anywhere else, because it just seems like a constant battle, a constant fight. You just want your kids to get a good education. And there's a constant ongoing whack-a-mole type feature to the politics of it. Where did you see it coming from? Was it from the school boards? Was it from the Ministry of Education? My experience, both as a parent when my kids were in school, as a short time school council member, and from knowing a lot of teachers, is that often it was the teachers' unions and the consultants within the boards. They hire these consultants for everything under the sun, and you wonder why the education budget goes up and there's no more spending in the classroom. It's going to the educrats. That was my experience. Both the unions and these educrat consultants, was that your experience as well as a teacher, that you were being pushed from both the board and from your union to adopt different political views or push different political agendas?
Oh, yeah, 100%. It's coming from all angles. There's the boards pushing it. They've got their initiatives all the time, like, oh, we've got Black History Month here and this Transphobia Week here and all of Anti-Bullying Week, and all of this stuff is used to usher in the ideology all the time. I mean, at the OCSB, the Ottawa Catholic Board, they're doing Standing Against Racism Week this week after just ending their whole month of anti-racism in February for Black History Month. It's just never ending. So it's coming from everywhere. It's coming also from individual teachers who, if they're active on social media and they're following the latest woke trends, they will want to bring that into their classroom. And the consultants, as you said, there's so many of them, and they are making a ton of money. Some of them charge from $1,000 to $2,000 just for one workshop, and that's out of taxpayer money. So it's really a scandal. But I will say, though, like, as much as there is a lot of pressure, there is still an opportunity for teachers in the system to not push this stuff in their own individual classrooms, as long as they're quiet about it. I know a lot of good teachers who are still in the system, and they're doing their best to provide some kind of balance. It's just that I guess the problem is when you have the activist teachers who want to push only one way of thinking. In fact, they probably don't even know what the other side is saying. They have the go ahead, and they're encouraged to do that. So,
is it just a sign if a teacher is quiet and not political that they're necessarily conservative? Because obviously a lot of this comes from the progressive woke left. if you're not participating in it, are you giving yourself away as a nonconformist, as a centrist, as a conservative, or something other than the view of the day?
Actually, that's a good question, because more and more what I've noticed is before, it used to be more of an opt-in method where you got to like step up and do more activism if you wanted to. But now it's almost like everyone's expected to do the activism. And if you don't want to do it, you need to opt out in some cases. Like, for example, if they have a day where everyone needs to wear black, which happened at the Ottawa Catholic Board not too long ago, maybe last month, it was United in Black Day for racism. Now, you need to wear a black shirt because otherwise you're going to, it's going to be very clear where you stand on this stuff. And it's not that you're for racism, of course, I should specify. It's just that maybe you don't believe that that particular method of addressing racism is the best one.
You are getting sent a lot of information, and on your social media, you are now posting what people are sending you. Who are you getting this from? Is it teachers who are, I'm not asking you to expose anyone, but you know, is it teachers that are sending?
You know what? Most of the stuff that I post is just me finding it. It's all available online. People can do exactly what I'm doing. You don't need to have any kind of login codes. You can message me. I'll tell you what I do. I'll tell you how to find it, because honestly, I could work at this from 24 hours a day for probably years and years and years, and I would still have way too much material that I wouldn't be able to post. It's nonstop. Every rabbit hole that I find brings me to another rabbit hole of more wokeism in our schools. So I do get sent maybe 25% of what I post. That comes from, I would say, probably 50-50 teachers and parents. But the rest is just stuff I'm finding on my own.
Every time I write on these sorts of things, you know, for example, a report that was issued by the head of Ontario's public service declaring that the entire Ontario public service is based on white supremacist foundations. That was a statement by one person, not named, in a focus group, and it became the focus of the actual report. Every time I write on these sorts of things, it's a steady stream of people saying, thank you for this. Have you seen this one? And there does seem to be an industry of consultants. And in my view, they're brought in to run these courses, but oftentimes they're not dealing with Canadian examples. You know, racism continues to exist in this country, and it's a problem that should be discussed, should be dealt with. But if you are constantly giving children or adults in a workplace American examples, well, that doesn't match the Canadian lived experience, does it?
Yeah, no, it doesn't. A lot of it is brought in from the States. Their examples are just all based on the same kind of thinking. Yeah, I mean, I could name you offhand like consultant after consultant. They do the same thing. They get paid thousands and thousands. They go in there and they convince kids that, you know, their race is a really important part about them. They need to acknowledge other people's race and treat them differently on that basis. It's really, really terrible, dangerous stuff.
What's the worst thing that you saw as a teacher that came forward? What was the part that made you most concerned for what students were going to be exposed to?
Well, when I was working as a teacher that last year, I was still sort of waking up. I'll say most of what I've found has come after I had left that system.
Yeah, you know, yeah. It can be after you've left, but I mean, sometimes I look at what is there and I'm dumbfounded finding out that Thanksgiving is racist. And then you find out, well, what's that based on? Well, it's based on a Schoolhouse Rock cartoon version of the American Thanksgiving with the Pilgrims and the Pioneers meeting in Massachusetts. That's not Canada, but it shows up in Canadian materials on anti-racism training.
Well, I'll say probably the most striking thing for me has been to see it come into math class. I mean, you would think that math and science would be, you know, somewhat protected from this kind of flawed thinking, but it's not the case. A lot of math teachers are actually some of the biggest activists that I see for this stuff. They think that math is racist because, for example, in the past, when grade 9 math was divided into applied and academic courses, we would see an overrepresentation of Black students in the applied course. So they figured that was racist, and that math, in order to make math better or more equitable and all of that, we needed to make it culturally relevant, they call it, or culturally relevant and responsive. So this is the CRRP thing that they're bringing in, which is, for example, giving more reference points in the questions that might touch on different cultures, and not so much emphasis on marks and on success, and just not having exams, not having standardized tests anymore. I guess all of this stuff is supposed to help Black students succeed or something. I'm not sure.
I remember writing on that in the Ontario curriculum, their grade 9 math curriculum that came out in 2021 at a time when most students were not meeting the provincial standard, and the curriculum read, mathematics is often positioned as an objective and pure discipline. However, the content and context in which it is taught, the mathematicians who are celebrated in the importance that is placed upon mathematics by society are subjective. Mathematics has been used to normalize racism and marginalization of non-Eurocentric mathematical knowledges, and a decolonial anti-racist approach to mathematics education makes visible its historical roots and social constructions. If you understand math and the history of math and the fact that a lot of the theories, you know, people say, well, it started with the Greeks. Yes, and then we also had Arabic mathematicians, Indian mathematicians, they invented the zero. It has been a worldwide set of contributions that each culture is built upon. I don't know how that becomes white nationalist.
Right. And I don't know about you, but when I took math in high school, I never remember being told that someone was white or Black or whatever. We didn't care about the race of the mathematician we were talking about. In fact, we didn't even hardly talk about the mathematicians. We talked about how to do math, you know? So it's really bizarre. Like, I'll read you just from the TDSB, they put out a file online, and anyone can find it. It's called Pedagogical Considerations for Equitable and Culturally Relevant and Responsive Mathematics. And, you know, there's a list of questions there. It's like a checklist. And it says, like, for example, does the task or resource incorporate a social justice perspective? Consider how the resource explores current issues. Consider whether the resource encourages students to use mathematics as a tool to address and challenge injustices and propose possible solutions. There's stuff like, have you considered how the information shows bias? And all kinds of, you know, social justice typical language that you would not expect to find in a course like math, but here we are.
What's next for you? What do you do next? Is it get your name cleared? What's the status of the investigations you're facing?
Well, last month I had a bit of good news. They dropped one of my investigations, the one pertaining to the critical race theory comment on Facebook. So that was good. But they just started up a new investigation last week. And that one, so the Ontario College of Teachers, so the licensing board for all teachers in Ontario, so they could strip me of my license, they could suspend me, they could do all kinds of things. So the problem now is one tweet that I put out in October of this year when I was running for the school board. And the tweet...
Or October of 2022.
Exactly, yeah. And the tweet I put out was an email that had been sent to me by an OCDSB, so the Ottawa Public Board staff. And what it said was that there was a school board-wide initiative where they would be hosting after-school virtual hangouts with the kids, but not just any kid. It was on Monday, it was for Muslim kids, and on Thursdays, it was for Black kids, and on Tuesday, Wednesday, it was for LGBT kids. You had to be kindergarten and up to attend. So I got that email and I posted it, and they took issue with the fact that, well, they're accusing me of having put links to the meetings in, like, having shared links to the meetings in that email, even though there are no meeting links in it. And they're telling me that I put students at risk because some of the meeting codes were in the email that I shared, even though, anyway, it's a long story, but there was different sections to the emails. And from my perspective, I didn't share anything that I couldn't, that I was told not to share. So I guess I just wait for that and see where that goes.
It is a bizarre world for you. Chanel, thanks for your time today, and keep in touch and let us know where things go from here.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on.
Full Comment is a Postmedia podcast. My name's Brian Lilly, your host. This episode was produced by Andre Prue, with theme music by Bryce Hall. Kevin Libin is the executive producer. Again, remember, you can subscribe to Full Comment on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, Amazon Music. Listen through the app or your Alexa-enabled devices. And of course, help us out by giving us a rating or leaving a review. And make sure you tell your friends about us. Thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm Brian Lilly.